2:01. I'm here. Barry's here.
Hello.
Chambo's here.
Hello.
Sam's here.
Hello.
Who puts together the podcast best bits? Is it you, Sam? Can you make sure you keep Jim Proudfoot's talk up? Because I edited it on his laptop, and I'm giddy with excitement that he just read out. That's how it'll end. So make sure you listen to all of this podcast, because the last bit is the best. Otherwise, I had quite a nice time, Barry. I might still be drunk.
That's very unprofessional of you.
Yeah, it is. But, actually, it probably makes me marginally more interesting.
That is true.
So, look, here's the podcast of our show. It includes my notes on the Premier League review. Did a good joke about Madu Barrow.
I don't think that joke was as good as you think it was.
Do you not?
Selling it a bit too much. Oh,
okay.
It was pretty average.
Okay. We discussed who would win in a fight. And someone sent a tweet, and we didn't read it out, but he said he listened for half an hour, and it was the worst radio he'd ever heard. Ever. Of all radio ever. So look, here it is edited down. I hope you enjoy it.
Yes, hello everybody. This is the world's biggest sports radio station, Max Rushton, and Barry Glendenning from The Guardian. Fine sports writer, Barry Glendenning. With me until 1 this afternoon, following our Sunday scoreboard with Jim Proudfoot. Keeping you across all the football today, Manchester City, Southampton, and Jose going back to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea versus Manchester United. Barry, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
We both quite enjoyed that news story about Gravesend trying to change. I've never been to Gravesend. Might be lovely, might not, don't know. Described as the armpit of Kent.
That's quite harsh.
It is harsh, but someone from the council or whatever, who's clearly got nothing better to do, saying, why don't we call it Gravesend on Thames? And then it'll change everyone's view of that place.
Yeah, or they could make it look less like an armpit. I've never been in Gravesend.
In Gravesend, could they just, is that fair, armpit, or not?
Is it better or worse than Lewisham, Chatham? Chatham, the left knee of Kent.
I was going to say, is there anything worse than being the armpit? But yes, of course, there is. In fact, I was called it last week by a Manchester United fan.
Bromley, the bit between the toes of Kent.
Oh, yeah. Talk sport, what does that sound like? Does that sound classy enough for us? Or do we need a suffix on the end of talk sport? They're getting on Thames on the end of Gravesend. What could we put on the end of TalkSport to make us sound like just a classier? So we could try and steal some listeners from Radio 4 when they're scrolling through the Radio Times to decide what to listen to this morning. That sounds like a classy radio station.
I'm not sure. TalkSport.
Deluxe. What do you reckon? Luxury TalkSport? TalkSport Intellectual? TalkSport 2, that would be a good one. Anyway, if you want to help us with that, you can. 81089 on the text. How are you, Barry? It's nice to see you.
Very nice to see you as well. I'm great this week, thank you.
What did you do?
Considerably better fettle than you, by the sound of things.
Yes, Sambuca regret, I believe it's called. Not my choice. When the whole football team passed them round. And the glass is so small, isn't it, that you can't help but spill it. And get that sort of, get sticky on your fingers.
Yeah.
And then you rub it on your jeans, and then you've got a pair of Sambuca jeans, which obviously are the ones I'm wearing today because they were the ones that were on the floor this morning. So that's how I live.
You're all class.
You've got an idea for today's show. That's exciting. Have you got any, because last week you began the show with an idea to revolutionise football. And you got some real abuse for it, and you wanted to shorten football by half an hour, which actually would have been very good for the Liverpool-Manchester United game.
Well, I think many people may have come around to my way of thinking, having seen the various footballing travesties that unfolded following my suggestion that we trim 15 minutes off each half. But
have you got any other ones to get some abuse, or have you decided to go back in your box, have no ideas?
Back in my box.
No more ideas for you?
Yeah, I can't be bothered. Life's too short for that kind of abuse. I still maintain that trimming 15 minutes off each half would improve the game.
Okay, good. Would you like the agenda for today's show, Barry?
Nothing would please me more, Max.
Oh, okay, that's good. Here's how the show works. We have a 10-point agenda on the show. If we achieve everything on that list, then, you know, well done us. Well done me, and well done Barry. And well done you guys as well for sticking with us for the whole time. If we don't fulfil the agenda, then doesn't matter, because nothing really matters, does it, in life? So here is the 10-point agenda. One, we talk balls. Two, we look ahead to the Manchester City-Southampton game with Francis Benali. Find out how his legs are as well. Point three, we look ahead to the Old Firm game with John Collins. Four, we look ahead to Chelsea-Manchester United with a boxer who supports Chelsea. Five, we look ahead to Chelsea-Manchester United with a footballer who used to play for Manchester United. Six,
so a lot of looking ahead.
Yeah, well, it's a preview show, isn't it? Sometimes I think the bosses think there's not enough content football-based in this show, so I was just bringing it to the attention of the bosses and the listeners. Six, we take Ray Stubbs to another place.
Gravesend. We could take Ray Stubbs to Gravesend and then get him to report back on what it's like.
What about Dan in Grimsby says, well, Max, you could call the show Talk Sport Sober. Yeah, that works. Nigel Laverick says, how about Talk Sport Near the Mall? this is Mark from Epsom, says... which he describes as the upper thigh of Surrey. The way to make people in this country think something is posh is add some French. So how about Talk Sport du Vin? Mm-hmm. It's a nice idea. I keep them coming, please.
That petit jus of Talk Sport.
Oh, good idea, yeah. The Premier League review is back. I've taken notes.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried about this.
Why is that?
Because you never take notes.
No, I just thought...
You claim to have been out carousing with your football pals.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you come in having quite clearly made what can only be described as notes on yesterday's
I watched the highlights
this morning. When did you take these notes?
Between 8.30 and 9.30 this morning.
Okay.
And I was listening to TalkSport and TalkSport 2 and Talk Radio and Virgin. I was watching all the Sky Sports channels and I was watching the highlights as well of the football.
Oh, good for you.
Just to keep my employers happy. Point nine, John Ketley will tell Don McGuinness what the weather's like in Manchester. The 10th point does not exist anymore. I'm still not allowed to tell you about it. So, Barry, your idea for a text topic phone in. Georgie Bingham didn't sound too excited about it, but we're going to crack on anyway. Take it away. What happened to you yesterday?
Well, yesterday I went to watch Dulwich Hamlet play AFC Sudbury at Champion Hill. And I suppose Dulwich Hamlet are probably my local team. They're if I was to get a map out with a ruler, they would be the nearest sort of professional-ish football team to where I live.
Are they the buttock of South London?
Be the right nipple of South London.
Oh, how nice.
Because they're on a little hill.
Oh, see? I see. Yeah, very well thought.
I went with a few mates and... one of my pals brought his 7-year-old son. It was his first ever proper football match. Mm-hmm. Momentous occasion in a young man's life.
Yeah. Coming of age moment, isn't it?
Most of which he spent playing with some other kids down the side of the stand, not watching the football at all.
Absolutely right.
But at one point, while he was still watching the football, he inquired what happened to the footballs that occasionally got kicked over one of the stands.
Is that a regular occurrence at Dulwich Hamlet?
I think it happened 3 times yesterday. It definitely happened twice.
3 was about right at Cambridge. We had a right back called Andy Jeffrey who only side-footed it over the stand. That's basically, that was his entire career, over the Habin.
Rather than focus on the nuance of the game, you know, Dulwich Hamlet's formation or their high press... Mm. Or the manner in which they constantly tried to make a fool of the Sudbury left back, and the Sudbury manager did nothing to counter this obvious tactic. He wanted to know what happened to the footballs that got kicked over the stand.
Very good question for a 7-year-old.
Well, I think he had half an eye on going to get one for himself.
Yeah,
I could hear the cogs turning in his little 7-year-old brain. So his father just did what you normally do in these situations and told him a lie, which was he said that each garden, because there's some houses along behind the stand, he said each garden had a person sitting in it with a giant tennis racket and their job was to just whack the ball back over the stand. But it sort of got me to thinking, you know, it happens a lot. You see baseballs being hit out of stadiums.
Golf balls.
Cricket balls. Footballs. Do any of our listeners, have you ever got one?
Yeah.
You know, do you have you ever been driving past Lourdes and suddenly out of the sky a cricket ball drops, lands on the bonnet of your car and makes a big dent?
Yeah. This is what we want to collect balls today. We've got a few already. Hosk on Twitter says, at Roots Hall, Joe Ski 7, his mate, gets four a season in his garden.
I'd like to know as well, did Joe Ski 7, does he keep them? Does he bring them back to
South End? Does he give them to Phil Brown?
Because these balls are probably quite expensive.
Steve says, a mate of mine used to live in one of the flats behind Exeter City St James's Park, ended up with a ball in his living room one evening. keep them coming, please. 81089 on the text. Ideally, we want, you know, I was going past the Maracanã and then the ball landed in my tuk-tuk or something. That's the dream. That's the dream text for today.
Yeah.
Yeah, 81089.
But Cass, before, you know, when we were doing our this
talk
is
up.
What we'll be talking about, he mentioned that at Luton Town, balls used to regularly get kicked into someone's garden. I just had this image, like, of a sort of a Mick Hartford looking sheepish, ringing someone's doorbell, going, you know, can I have my ball back, please?
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM. Talk Sport.
Manchester City play Southampton today. Let's chat to Saints legend Francis Benali. Francis, how are you?
Yeah, very good, Max. Morning, Barry.
Hello, Franny.
First of all, when did you finish your incredible run, cycle, relentless craziness, Francis?
It was a week ago today, Max. We arrived back at St Mary's when Saints were playing Burnley on... last Sunday. So it's a week since we finished now.
And just remind everyone exactly what you did.
2 years ago, I ran to every Premier League football stadium raising funds for Cancer Research UK. And I wanted to take on another challenge to raise further funds for them again. So we tried to come up with a challenge that would raise the bar. And over 2 weeks, I ran a marathon every day. And then after the marathon, I got on the bike to ride a further minimum of 75 miles. So I was covering a minimum of 100 miles a day for 2 weeks by going to every Premier League ground and Championship football club this time.
And Franny, I believe towards the end of this incredible feat, you were suffering from a practically ruptured Achilles and a torn hamstring. Just how painful was it?
The niggles and pains came a lot sooner than what I thought they would have done. I knew there would have been the general fatigue of doing that kind of mileage each day, but I thought injury-wise, I might have got at least a week or maybe 10 days into the challenge before there was any real issues. But it was quite literally from day one. You know, we had some real tough hills to get through on the bike going up to Bristol from Bournemouth. My Achilles was an issue throughout. The hamstring settled down with some treatment and, sort of strapping it up a little bit. But, the Achilles was a constant sort of, pain to try and block out and just try and get on with. But there's lots of difficult miles and days where I was struggling through with the injuries, but thankfully with the support of my family and the support team, we managed to complete it.
Do you think you might never do one of these again now? I mean, it just sounds so miserable. You know, I mean, it's obviously brilliant to raise the money and it's an amazing achievement, but you must sit there now and think, God, I've done my bit. There are lots of other people, you know, in this country who haven't done anything. You can sort of have a sit down now.
I must admit, Max, I'm not getting any younger, and it does take its toll on my body and mind, you know. But you know, that's part of the reason for doing it, you know, to try and engage and people to want to donate and inspire people to take something on in their own lives, maybe that they might have thought is impossible. But I think for the first time, you know, that this is my second challenge now in a few years, and I think really for the first time I really saw how it put my family who were with me on the road every day, my wife, my son and daughter, and the support team, you know, how it really put them through the mill, not just for the 2 weeks of the challenge, but for the months and months that I was training. You know, it just completely consumed all of us. So in a way, it might not be fair to put them through another challenge in the future, but we'll see. Never say never.
Can people still donate?
They can, mate. Yeah, they can go to the website, which is benalisbigrace.com. There's all kinds of videos and photos on there from the challenge. But there's a Just Giving link which would enable people to donate, or they can make a text donation by texting Fran in capitals, F-R-A-N, to 70200. And that would make a £5 donation to cancer research.
What do you think about the game coming up? Man City obviously got battered in the week in Barcelona. Southampton was unlucky to lose in Inter Milan, really, weren't they?
That's an understatement, Max, isn't it? For anyone that saw the game, you know, Southampton completely dominated Inter, and, you know, the fact that they did it at the San Siro as well. I know Inter have been struggling a little bit of late, but, you know, what a performance from Southampton. You know, they quite literally did everything you would hope, bar score a goal. And, you know, to come away from the San Siro without anything to show for it whatsoever was extremely frustrating for them and disappointing. But, you know, they'll take a lot of heart from the performance itself, I'm sure, because they were certainly the better team on the night.
Franz, what have you made of Claude Puel so far? Did you know much about him when he got the job?
I'll be honest, Barry, I didn't know. You know, the club have, you know, made a few appointments now where we've lost Pochettino first time round, and then Koeman, number of players as we've seen around that sort of summer period. And when Claude was appointed, I knew very little, if anything, about him. And he's come in, and it's taken a little while for him to stamp his own philosophy of football on the squad and the club. And but that's all coming now. I mean, you know, up until the goal they conceded against Burnley last week was the first that they'd conceded in six games. They had six clean sheets before then, and things are starting to click a little bit now. The players seem to be really sort of taking on board what he's after, and you know, they're putting it into practice, and it's looking good. You know, we're fighting on all fronts still at the moment. Slowly sort of creeping up the Premier League a little bit as well, but we have got some tough games coming up, none more so than today against City.
Francis, just to go slightly off topic, I have in front of me a photo of you wearing red robes and a floppy black hat with a tassel in it from where you got your honorary doctorate during the summer. Tell us about that.
Dr.
Benali.
One of the universities in Southampton, you know, very, very generously offered me an honorary doctorate from the university, and, you know, from a services to sport. And I felt a little bit guilty because my daughter actually graduated from the same university at the same time, and, you know, there was a conversation in the household that, you know, she's been slogging her guts out for a number of years, like all the other students, to obtain their degrees, and I sort of rock up and just sort of
but she hasn't been a cultured ball playing libero for Southampton for years, has she?
Well, maybe not. But you know, she certainly seemed to work harder for that degree than I did. But I was very honoured to receive it, and you know, I go in and give some sort of motivational talks to the students. So that's something that I enjoy doing.
Francis, thank you for your time. As always, amazing achievement. I'll get the Just Giving page. I'll stick it out on my Twitter and all that as well. And
you could donate to it as well, Max.
I will. I absolutely will as well, Barry. There's no doubt about that.
That'd be brilliant, Max. Thank you. But a quick one, guys. I've seen you on your Twitter and that already. You're talking about the losing a ball or obtaining a ball.
Yeah.
As a quick one, as a kid playing cricket in the street one summer, you know, as you used to do, me and my friend were playing a little bit with a tennis ball, and a car drove down the street, and I went, yeah, get one more bowl in quickly. And he sort of bowled the ball, and I smashed the ball, you know, what I thought I'd be doing it. And as the car went by, it went by his open rear window, and he just drove off with it. We lost our ball.
That's definitely
six. Play anymore.
That's definitely six and out, isn't it? Cheers, Francis, top man.
Take care. Cheers.
Francis Benali there. We'll update to that game, of course, in Sunday Scoreboard with Jim Proudfoot from 1 o'clock this afternoon. We'll have the Premier League review next.
Max and Barry's Premier League review on TalkSport.
It's time for the Premier League review. Me and Barry will talk you through all of yesterday's Premier League football. Our own unique take on it, that's what they'd say, wouldn't they, when other people talk up our show. Their own unique take.
A sideways look.
Sort of slightly patronising. I took some notes this morning. I thought that could add to the Premier League review. I'd say, why don't you just throw a game at me and I'll tell you the notes that I've made and you can see what you think. So okay. Pick any game. It doesn't matter if it was the best one or the worst one. I've got notes.
We go Hull 0, Stoke 2.
The first note I took was Shawcross sort of handled the ball in the box. It was booted at him and he couldn't get his hand out of the way. And it wasn't a penalty. But it was just the phrase when the commentator said, was his hand in an unnatural position? And it was one of my... It's sort of a bugbear, but also one of my favourite commentary phrases. I think it's in the rules as well. As what exactly defines how unnatural a position your hand can be in? Do you have to do?
It's like the end of your leg instead of a foot.
Like Mr. Tickle, then it is. that was one note. Shaqiri, obviously scored two lovely goals. His pass to Arnautovic was amazing at the end. Is he the only player left in the Premier League with a slight paunch?
I don't know.
Because footballers are
Troy Deeney.
I think Deeney's more...
Troy Deeney's
a barrel,
paunch
isn't it?
Really slight.
No, Troy Deeney's paunch is a lesser version of Darren Goff's. If you ever work with Darren Goff, he'll tell you how much exercise he's doing. You know, he's always doing insanity or something, some sort of workout. And he'll lift up his shirt and he'll show you, although it's kind of a big frame, there's no fat on there. It's just a barrel. And I think Deeney's more that way than Shaqiri. Anyway, that was just my... They're my notes on Holstock.
Okay, right. Well, what notes did you make on West Ham 1, Sunderland 0?
West Ham-Sunderland, I have written no notes.
No notes.
No, nothing worth saying. Moyes was upset it was offside at the end, but it wasn't.
It wasn't offside, no. And if that's what he's been reduced to moaning about, well...
Mind you, I think if you think in the 94th minute, Winston Reid's got to flick the ball through his legs and then ping one in the bottom corner, you'd probably say, you know what? He's not going to score that. So fair play. He did very well. His first touch was brilliant. Mike sends a tweet. Sorry, what a coincidence. As you talk about the ball in garden tales, Chris Waddle's ball from Italia 90 just landed in mine. thanks, Mike. Give me another game.
Okay. Leicester stretched their unbeaten home run to 20 league games yesterday. They beat Crystal Palace 3-1 in a result that may have surprised some people. What notes did you make on that, Max?
And my first note is Okazaki has such a lovely beaming smile. Doesn't he?
He does.
And he's happy. I don't think anyone is happier than Okazaki when he's happy. And I love him for that.
Right.
Point two, lovely strike from Christian Fuchs. And I think commentators are sad that he doesn't score more because it's a very good name to shout for a commentator. There are some, you know, like Aguero, like that. And Fuchs works quite well for that. And my final point was, what is Johan Cabaye's natural hair colour? Because I was convinced he had sort of pretty dark hair, but he's come out with a sort of mousy brown now. And I wonder if that's the natural one or if this is the dyed one. There are my notes on that. Did you want to add anything?
Well, I've been making some notes on your notes.
Yeah.
And I can't help but notice you made three different notes on Leicester Palace.
Yeah.
You made several notes on Hull Stoke.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't make any notes at all on West Ham.
No,
Sunderland.
I didn't.
Why do you hate West Ham and Sunderland?
I just do.
Right, okay. Liverpool 2, West Brom 1.
Yep.
Liverpool's zonal marking at corners proved sort of their undoing in their latest failure to keep a clean sheet. What notes did you make on this game?
Right, my first note about this, and I've made this about Liverpool before, is I know it's good for Liverpool fans that they've increased the size of Anfield, right? I understand that that's important for Liverpool fans, but what they have not taken into account is the casual armchair viewer of football at Anfield because the camera angle has moved. So I don't believe it's at Anfield. It's really upset me that it's changed. It's gone higher. It's like it's at the Nou Camp or something.
Right.
Have you not seen this?
I have noticed.
I'm very particular about camera angles. It's like occasionally when Spurs are in Europe, they put the camera on the touchline and you can't see anything. Very frustrating. Huge appreciation for Coutinho's dummy in the build up to Mane's goal, which was a lovely goal. And
sorry, is that the same note or a different note?
Different note. An amazing block from the beautiful Jonas Olsen.
Okay.
And then the notes I took.
It was Bob Bradley's first home game as Swansea manager. Scoreless draw, Watford. I'm sure Bob would be only too delighted to hear what Max Rushton noted during this game?
Not many notes on this. The only note I've made is Modu Barrow, if he has a son, do you think if we paid him a lot of money, he'd call him Wheel?
It's something to bear in mind. We could ask him.
Because that would be nice, wouldn't it? Next game.
All right. That's your only note.
Yeah.
Right. We're running out of games here. That's okay. Oh, hold on. Arsenal nil, Middlesbrough nil.
No notes.
No notes. No. Right. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess you didn't make too many notes about Bournemouth nil, Tottenham nil.
I've made two notes.
Oh, really?
One is, do you think they should just book Eric Lamella before the game starts? Because there's just a yellow card. He probably should have been sent off, actually. Very good footballer, but just he's always flying in. Just doesn't need to do that. And the other thing, Harry Arter, as I said on Match of the Day as well, fair play to him, because Sissoko elbowed him in the face. And he said, well, look, he said he didn't mean it, so I believe him, and I hope he doesn't get banned. Well done, Harry Arter.
All right. Do you think Sissoko is chuckling up his sleeve because he did mean it?
I don't know. It looked like he meant it, didn't it?
And I think we've only one game left. Burnley 2, Everton 1. Burnley 90th minute winner for the first time ever in the Premier League.
Right.
What notes did you make on this, man?
Two notes. One, Goodmanson's touch for the first goal when the ball's coming and he lays it off with his left foot into the guy running through was glorious. And he looks like a lovely footballer. Obviously, good shot as well, which hit the bar before Arfield put the winner in. The other note is when the commentators first said Balassi, the future Mrs. Russian thought she said Selassie, and she wondered if Selassie from the Bake Off was playing for Everton. And then they replayed the Burnley goal, and she thought that was another one, a bit like Alan Partridge. And she told me Selassie's opening a bakery in West London. Do you think I should do notes next week?
I'm wholeheartedly in favour of you taking notes because it means far less work from me.
We'll be looking into the Old Firm derby in just a second. Rangers v Celtic League Cup semi-final. And Dave says, I think the music to the Premier League review is longer than you spend on each game. You're absolutely right.
We'll and it's better than the analysis.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM. Talk Sport.
2:15 kickoff, Rangers versus Celtic, the Scottish League Cup semi-final at Hampden Park. Let's chat to former Celtic midfielder John Collins. John, how are you?
Morning, Max Barley. Very good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on. Any reason why this shouldn't go the same way as the league game where Celtic won 5-1?
No, I think it'll be a closer affair. I think there's changes in the Rangers team. I think the last game, Mark Warburton got his team selection wrong. He brought Senderos come in. He hadn't played for weeks, had hardly trained. Had a shocker of a game, got sent off. So he's out of the team. Joey Barton is no longer in the team. Crankyar's injured. And I think Rangers have got more legs in the team. I think that's probably a good way to put it. But they're going to be up against it. Celtic are in fine form domestically, scoring lots of goals, creating lots of chances. But it's an Old Firm derby. And Mark Ward, the one thing about his teams, they try and play football and they try and get possession of the ball. So I don't think that will change. They'll do their very best to compete with the ball. The problem they'll have is stopping Celtic in the wider areas. They've got a lot of pace. So that's going to be a problem for Rangers, I think.
I went up and interviewed Brendan Rodgers for Fantasy Football a month or so ago. And, you know, he seemed to be loving it. And what everyone was saying was, you know, he understands the Celtic way. What have you made of his start so far?
Well, I like Mark Warburton. I think he's smart. I think he's a good coach. And I think when you watch his team, you can tell he does a lot of work in the training pitch with the ball. His team is try and play open, expansive football, entertaining, which I believe is the right way to play. But it's a test when you're up against Celtic, who have got a lot of good players, probably better players than Rangers, near enough all over the park. So the challenge is going to be, I don't think controlling the game, the challenge is going to be trying to stop Celtic. When Rangers are attacking, Celtic will be at their most dangerous. When they win the ball off Rangers, they go from one end of the pitch to the other very, very quick with Scott Sinclair, Forrest and Dembele. So it's going to be a real challenge for them because the fullbacks are going to need a lot of help today.
John's...
They can't just carry on.
Sorry, I was going to say, stay where you are. There's been a wicket in the cricket. We'll come back to you. John Norman.
238 for 8 at Bangladesh, and Kamaral Islam's gone for a duck. Brilliant bowling from Stuart Broad. He's picked up his second wicket in a match-defining spell of seven overs for just 10 runs, two wickets in that. Bangladesh still 48 runs away. England two wickets away. Bangladesh 238 for eight.
John Collins still with us. Barry, you have a question for John Collins.
John, for those of us who will never play in an Old Firm derby, is it the kind of game you can enjoy as a player, or is it just a rather stressful occasion that you try to get through as best you can?
Well, I think the simple question, when you're on top and you're winning the game, it's a game you're loving. You hear your supporters singing, you're controlling the game, you're loving every minute of it. But another foot, if you're getting beat 1-0 or 2-0, and the opposition's on top, then it's a tough game to play in. But when you're a football player, these are the games you dream about as a young man, playing in stadiums packed, full of tension, atmosphere, lovely big pitch. So you've got to look forward to these type of games. Certainly I did when I was a young footballer.
Or was there any game you played in that compared to it? Because literally every ex-player I've ever talked to who's played in this game and has played in other derbies, be it Liverpool, Everton, or the North London derby, the Manchester derby, or other ones, just says nothing competes.
Well, I played in the Everton derby, Everton-Liverpool, and it doesn't compare. Certainly it's at Ibrox and Celtic Park. They're two magnificent stadiums. But today, being at Hampden, I'm not a huge fan of Hampden. It doesn't have the same kind of atmosphere. The supporters are further away from the pitch, so there's not quite the same edge and tension at Hampden as there is at Celtic Park or Ibrox.
Celtic, disappointing result in the Champions League in midweek. I mean, it was always going to be a hard group, but how disappointing was that?
Yeah, I was at the game. Celtic were well beaten on the night by a very good German team. They passed the ball ever so well. The movement was excellent. But it's always going to be tough, Celtic in the Champions League. The step up from Scottish football to the Champions League, and certainly the group they've got, is massive. And that's a challenge for the manager and the players. But certainly domestically, Celtic are controlling every game, creating so many chances. So the challenge today is, can Rangers play better than they did in the first game? I think they will. Can they not concede an early goal? The last thing Rangers want to do is concede an early goal. If they concede an early goal today, then I would really worry for them. They've got a smart manager, and I think he instills confidence in his players. Rangers players don't go out with fear in their bodies. When I watch them, they all want the ball, so it's great credit to the manager. I think for Rangers, they need that first goal. They need to try and get that first goal. And Celtic's back four aren't great, aren't the quickest either. People talk about Rangers, two central defenders, not having any pace, but Celtic aren't the quickest in central defence either.
John, thanks for your time, my friends.
Cheers, guys.
Top man, John Collins, former Celtic midfielder there. Updates of that game as well on Sunday Scoreboard with Jim Proudfoot. Here is a tweet from Jim Shelley, mainly aimed at you, I think, Barry. Dear TalkSport Sir Le Maire, he says, if Troy Deeney's got a paunch, God knows what the rest of us have. I'll leave you to tell him. Well, can we get Troy on and you can say, I think you've got a paunch?
As soon as I said it, I thought I phrased that really badly.
Yeah.
Troy Deeney's a fine footballer.
And a fine figure of a man.
And a fine figure of a man. But he is built quite stoutly and robustly.
Who's the lad who came on for Middlesbrough? He's got a barrel chest as well. I can't remember who came on. He was running the Arsenal defence pretty ragged as well. We'll find out in the break and tell you. But there's another one. But Shaqiri is the only one that sort of looks paunchy to me.
Are you saying he's fat?
No. No, he's not.
Are you saying Jordan Shaqiri is fat?
Now I've done my ACL, I'm out for a year. God, in a year's time, I am going to be so fat. It's depressing. We'll be back. Huge game of Ian Culverhouse coming next. Got a text earlier saying, what is Culverhouse? I know the player, but honestly, garbage. Thank you very much for that. This is dedicated to you, anonymous texter. Robert Ullathorne.
Jamie Pollock.
David Weatherall.
Roger Joseph.
Chris Price.
Kurt Nogan.
John Polston.
John Gannon.
Musa Saib.
Didier Six.
Timothy Atuba.
Mitchell Thomas.
Bob Boulder.
Neil Madison.
Mark Azlewood.
Ian Crook.
Ian Culverhouse.
Ah!
Get it. Good afternoon. This is the world's biggest sports radio station. Max Rushton and Barry Glendenning here on the warm-up until 1 after our Sunday scoreboard, Jim Proudfoot, Perry Groves. Perry Groves, who Barry and I saw sleepless. We left the studio last week, right? And Barry, you wandering off to the station. Yeah. And I was hobbling back to my car. And then I called you
200 metres between us, and you called me back.
And you said, this better be good. And I said, I think it is good. And then asleep in a sort of a 1980s Jaguar, it looked like. And I was like, I'm sure that's Perry Groves. And then Barry and I were having a debate as to whether Perry had been thrown out of the house. This is where he was now living. We woke him up and he said, no, he was just getting a bit of shut-eye between working in the morning and working here in the afternoon. The reason I didn't think it was Perry Groves was the number of straw boaters in the back of the car.
Yeah.
Perry Groves has a collection of straw boaters in his car. I don't know.
Also his house.
Which he's living in his car. We're going to do Footballers Are Nice with Alan McLaughlin in just a second. I'm on a great YouTube adventure watching his goal for the Republic of Ireland against Northern Ireland back in the 90s. A bit of feedback on Culver House. This is from Paul McGann. Says, oof, the Bob Boulder gambit. Turned the game there for Max. Real chess match, that one. Chris says, cracking game at Culver House. Not a classic, but edge of the seat dueling, boys. Richard says, Stoke have another player with a paunch, which is Charlie Adam. That's not related to that. And Shaz from Edinburgh got a compliment, which is nice and rare. He said, you never read out my full text. Sorry, why are you calling your show Megas 8? You should have listened to the first show we ever did 3 years ago. I like the Mo Barrow comment. Thanks very much. Let's do Footballers Are Nice. We take all feedback, positive and negative, if you'd like to get in touch.
Mainly negative.
Yes, we prefer that. It's more fun. Our today's contestant for Footballers Are Nice, the former Republic of Ireland, Manchester United, Swindon, Torquay, Southampton, Villa, Portsmouth, Wigan, Rochdale, Forest Green, Rovers. Midfielder Alan McLaughlin. How are you, Alan?
I'm fine, Max Barry. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Has anybody explained what this feature is, Alan? Or are you running blind?
I managed to listen. It was about 4 weeks ago.
Okay, good.
I just caught midway through Culver House, which I hadn't a clue what was going on.
Right.
And then I heard one of the boys. I can remember some of the questions, but okay, not
good.
All of them.
Okay, good. Well, it's an insight into your life, Alan, that we wanted to know for a long time. But before we get on to that, we have to ask you this important question, Alan McLaughlin. Are you nice?
Am I nice? I hope so. I'd like to think I'm nice. In the profession I'm in, there's one or two situations where I can't be nice. So, in general, I think if you're nice to me, I'm nice to you. That's probably the best way to put it.
Okay. Do you do anything nice? Charity-wise, we've had players with their own foundations. We've had Johnny Jackson, who said he would, under the pressure of live radio, start a charity foundation. There have been rumours, but nothing concrete yet from Johnny. Michael Duff gives 10p to a homeless person when he's passing. And Mickey Quinn wants money for himself.
That's no shot with Mickey, but yeah, I generally drop 10p, a pound, whatever I might have spare into someone's hands. I'm coming up to Waterloo Station, and I generally donate there to somebody who's less fortunate. I play in charity games where I can. I also donate to cancer charities. I think that's really important. So that was a big night on Friday night, and so donated then, and part of my proceeds from my benefit game at Fratton Park in July, when I finally get my monies through, we'll go to some charities there. So something I'm quite keen to participate in, and obviously give something back if I can.
Good stuff. And now, we haven't done enough research, Alan. What profession are you in now where you can't be nice all the time?
I'm the professional development coach at Swindon. So basically, from the town of C. So basically, I'm the under-18s manager and help out with the reserves. Okay. So obviously, you can't be nice all the time to the lads. You can't keep putting your arm around them and telling them how good they are. So you need a dose of reality once or twice during the week or during the month.
And Alan, do you have that horrible job of taking a young boy into the office and then crushing his dream and telling him he's not good enough?
It is the worst night of the year. Anyone who's in that profession, development profession, where you have to tell someone who might have been in the academy since he was 6 or 8, and then at 18 or 19, you have to tell him, unfortunately, you won't be staying with the club, or who's only been in just a short while at the club, and he's trying to get aspirations to be a professional football player. And it's about opinions. It's about what sort of finances you have at the football club and can you take players forward. So it is a terrible night, and anyone who's been in that position, and I'm sure there's many guys throughout the country listening now, will understand it's a terrible night. And it's terrible for the families as well, the extended families as well, not just the boy involved, because there's so much effort goes into it. And unfortunately, not everyone can take that step forward to the next level.
Now, Barry doesn't know, but we've actually got you on for you to let Barry down now for his broadcasting career to tell him that he isn't going to make it. So now let's crack on with the questions, Alan. I'm excited to know. You ready for your questions now?
Yeah,
you've qualified.
Yeah, by the way, fellas.
You've qualified to answer. Right, Alan McLaughlin, if Barry and I were to come for dinner, what would you cook for us?
Oh, blimey. I'm probably going to go something like steak pie.
Okay.
Chips, peas and gravy. I'm a northern boy, so I love my gravy, so... it'd be something dead basic, fellas. Yeah. My wife looks after me really well, so I don't do much cooking. So it'd be preheat the oven, stick the pie in, stick the chips in as well. I can manage the peas and just about manage the
gravy. Are you making your own pastry?
No, okay. Definitely not.
Okay, fine.
So you'd be just getting one straight out of the packet, fellas.
Okay. A ginster's pie.
Or a can.
Or a can, yeah.
A can of pie. Your question, Barry.
Alan, if you were coming to our house for dinner and we asked if there was anything in particular you didn't want to eat, what would you say?
Oh, there's two straight off the bat. Mashed potato, absolutely loathe it, and sprouts.
Okay.
So mash and sprouts are my two. Certainly don't. They'll be pushed to the side of the plate, politely, if someone serves them for me.
Okay. You've got past the stage of just hurling the plate on the floor, which is good. Alan, do you do your own laundry?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Do you recycle, Alan?
Yeah, yes, I do recycle. As the boys at Swindon Town will tell you, I've got a little bit of OCD, so I like to make sure my recycling's done properly and correctly and everything's put in the right bins. So, I'm keen to do that. And, it's something I encourage the girls to do at home as well. They're not so keen, but they do it.
When did you last take public transport, like a bus or a train?
It was about 6 months ago. I got the train into Paddington and I'm actually about to get on the train in the next hour to Paddington.
Oh, a big moment. Your biannual train journey.
Yeah, I'm covering with TalkSport live doing this. The Chelsea Man United game this afternoon. So
oh,
I'll jump on the train and head down.
Good stuff.
Alan, what is your favourite insect?
Favourite insect?
No, you are after Emmanuel Frimpong. You are allowed to have antelope.
Antelope?
That's what Frimpong went for.
Pat Jennings couldn't think of one at all.
Antelope. I'm going to go with dragonfly.
Oh, good answer. Might be the debut for the dragonfly. That. Alan McLaughlin, do you own a onesie? And if so, do you wear it?
No, I don't own a onesie, and I would never wear a onesie.
Good man.
Right. Not even if it had, like, cute animal ears?
Not if it had... No, nothing. I wouldn't put a onesie on, no.
Okay. Alan, what's your favourite cheese?
Favourite cheese, definitely, it's Wensleydale.
Okay. Alan, you're on death row. Sorry about that. With 1 hour to go, which TV show do you settle down to watch?
I'm going to be really pathetic here and say Match of the Day.
Okay. Right. No, that's a very good answer. Good show.
Alan McLaughlin, scorer of one of the most famous goals in Irish football history.
Thank you, Barry.
Yeah, thank you. if you could only eat one fruit for the rest of time, which one would it be?
That would be a pear. I like a nice soft pear.
It's true, but you've got about 10 seconds between a pear being ripe and a pear being mush, haven't you? You've really got to watch the pear. The other way, it'll just splat on you.
They're lovely. Pears all day long.
Okay. It's in defence of pears. They're quite strong feelings on the pear. How many toilets do you have, Alan?
Four.
Okay. Four sort of mid-table. You know, you're not going to get into Europe with four. You're not going to get into Europe with four toilets. You're not going to get into Europe with four toilets. Mark Schwarzer, who was on Match of the Day last night, will have nine when his renovations are done. We did wonder in the office, we were saying, wonder which toilet he used when he got home after doing the show last night.
Probably the one by the front door, I'd imagine.
Yes, you're probably right.
Alan, do you have more televisions than David O'Leary?
I would doubt it.
Right. Apparently this David O'Leary having a lot of tellies seems to be a big talking point among former Irish internationals.
Well, Dave had three testimonials as well, so me having less tellies was not that surprising, really.
Let's just clarify, David has 11.
Oh, no, nowhere near that. I actually, I've got six, which is quite... until I actually counted them up, and that was one of the questions I remembered from a few weeks ago, so I was quite surprised that I had that many.
It's quite a lot. Always interesting to know if you've got more TVs than toilets. Six, six to four.
I haven't got a TV in the toilet.
Okay,
so.
That's good to know, isn't it? What kind of pants do you prefer, Alan? Boxer, jockey, wide front? Oh, we've had a lot of commandos recently. Perry Groves, John Hartson.
Not commandos, okay, no good. Briefs. And I like to be nice and snug in there. I don't like to be, you know.
Not airy. I know.
No, definitely not. Nice and snug.
Okay, good.
Alan, are you better looking than Nordic god and West Brom defender Jonas Olsen?
I would suggest 20 years ago, Barry, yes, I was better looking. But now, I'm still better looking, yeah.
Okay.
Alan, do you smell nicer than Michael Carrick?
I would doubt that I smell nicer than Michael, no. I would doubt that, if I'm honest. I think he'd probably have a nice selection, whereas I just get for birthdays and Christmas.
I understand.
And finally, Alan McLaughlin, I suspect you'll have the inside track on this. Are you nicer than Linvoy Primus?
I do have the inside track. I've met and spoken with Linvoy many, many times, and no, I don't think, like you've said, I've heard that one before, I don't think anyone... is nicer than Linvoy.
What's so good about him?
Oh, he's just the nicest man in the world.
You just want to give him a hug when you see him.
He breathes niceness. It just emanates from every pore of Primus.
I've never met him, I don't.
You've never met him? We should organise that. Alan, look, great contestant. You're absolutely right. You're not as nice as Linvoy Primus. Six televisions, four toilets. Alan McLaughlin. Have fun on Matchday Live doing the Chelsea Manchester United game for TalkSport.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Thanks, guys.
Top man, Alan McLaughlin, there you are. Listening to the warm-up on TalkSport. Max Rushton, Barry Glendenning. We are here until one. This is the warm-up on TalkSport. Max Rushton, Barry Glendenning here until one. This is from Nigel Thompson, who is the travel editor of The Mirror. He says, hi, I was making up the numbers for my dad's office cricket team in the early 80s. Ended up batting with my dad. Got a couple of friendly long hops, biffed them for six. Both ended up in the river by the ground and were lost. Next ball I faced, my dad called for a ludicrous single and ran me out. I asked what the hell he'd done that for, and he replied that his team only had one ball left and they'd have to pack it in if we lost the last ball. He, of course, denies it now. Says I was too slow setting off. Don't know if this counts for ball stories. Cheers. Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. You can keep them coming for the next 10 minutes or so if you want. 81089 on the text. You can tweet at Max Rushton, at B. Glenn Denning. Right, big game, Chelsea versus Manchester United. A few people may have mentioned this is Jose Mourinho going back to Stamford Bridge for the first time since he got sacked last season in sort of controversial scenes. Yeah, I don't know if anyone else knew that, but yeah, this is the first time he's going back since then, Barry.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's look ahead to that game. Darren Barker, former IBF middleweight champion, Chelsea fan, is on the line. Darren, how are you?
Carefree, wherever you may be. Buzzing for it.
Are you excited?
Really,
are you
really looking forward to it? Yeah.
What's your pre-match preparation, Darren? From that singing, it sounds like you might have started already.
No. Funny enough, I'm not. I'm with the little whippersnappers. I'm taking them out. So, no. I'll go into that game. Done. It's over.
Really? And what kind of reception do you think Jose will get?
I think the majority of the ground will be positive. I think it'll get a round of applause. I think there will be a small section that will boo him. There always is, you know, in these occasions. But look, he's our most successful manager, and we should be happy for what we've achieved with him, you know. And he's obviously had to move on. We've moved on, and so be it. That's football.
He said that you know, if Man United score, he won't, you know, run down the line and do a knee slide. But if it gets tense, you can kind of imagine him doing that, can't you?
Yeah, I can. I was about to say that. I actually could see him doing it. And that will wind me up, and I'll take back everything I've just said. I'll hate him, and that'll be the end of mine and his relationship. But I hope he, you know, stays sat down, and I hope it's a good game of football, and I really think it will be. I think it's got all the ingredients to be a blockbuster.
Darren, a lot of people said the same about the game between Liverpool and Manchester United last week, and it turned out to be a bit of a damp squib. Are you concerned the same might happen here? What with your former manager's propensity to park a bus away from home.
That's true. But I think we're looking like we can score, and we also look like we can concede. And I just think, though, I would like to be, you know, a lot more, I don't know, safe at the back. That's why, for me, it's going to be an entertaining game. I've no doubt that Man United will score, but I just think Costa's in a bit of form, and the players around him, I just think we'll ultimately score more than them. You know, and that's football at the end of the day. But they're the reasons I think it's going to be so entertaining. It's because we do concede, and they've looked a bit leaky at times. And, yeah, like with our strike force, I just think we can create some chances and put it in the back of the net more than they can.
Darren, just got to go slightly off topic. I've, in an effort to shed some unwanted pounds, I've recently returned to the gym. I go to a boxing gym in Brixton, and everything is done in increments of 3 minutes, you know, what would have been a boxing gym. And I found that third minute just seems to drag. I'm looking at the clock, wondering if it's stopped. Was that the same for you when you were training, or more importantly, in the ring? Do you going like, crikey, they've forgotten to ring the bell here?
Yeah, sometimes I'm sure that the timekeepers have fallen asleep. It doesn't matter how fit you are, that, you know, then 3 minutes seem an eternity. But funny enough, you say that, I did a bit of training myself, and it's the first time that I've hit the pads in probably almost 3 years. And yeah, I mean, I was, the last 2 minutes, I was exhausted, let alone the last minute. My timing was off and all sorts. And there would be no chance of me ever wanting to return to the ring. I mean, I'm the happiest retired fighter there is. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't. I mean, I'm useless now.
It hasn't stopped other boxers in the past, has it?
No, but trust me, Max, you will not see me in that ring again. I am, like I say, the happiest retired fighter ever.
In the week, I got the 11 p.m. text to say that Alan Brazil wasn't coming in, and so I got some extra work, which was nice. And Tony Bellew came in the studio on Wednesday, I think. It's top boy, Tony.
Yep.
And we were talking about, he was sort of saying, look, the public want Bellew versus Hay. If that fight happens, which you presume it will, how would you see it going?
Oh, it's a tough one. I mean, I know them both quite well. I was in the Commonwealth Games with David Hay in 2002. I know Tony for the England camps as amateurs, and we've all sort of grown up with each other, if you like. You know, we're all around the same sort of age. We was in the same teams. We all sort of turned pro roughly around the same sort of times. So it's hard for me to call that one, if I'm honest. I mean, because of the personal side of things. But, I mean, the real issue here for Tony Bellew is, well, for Tony first, is the weight. I mean, David Hay, I would say, is one of the biggest punchers in world boxing, regardless of the weight. You know, pound for pound, probably one of the biggest punchers in world boxing. I mean, he really does whack. And the heavyweight, he carries the speed up with him. From obviously he was the unified cruiserweight champion. He carries that speed up, so speed generates power, and he's just he's a concussive one punch knockout artist. So for Tony Bellew he's only just, you know, recently moved up to cruiserweight. He's had a few fights at cruiser, so then move up to heavyweight or catchweight, as they say, then to take on, you know, one of the biggest punchers in world boxing is really a huge step. But let me say this, I mean, if he was to win, wow, I mean, what a statement that would be. And I mean, it's one of them, I think, he could retire off the back of that. You know, he's cruiserweight world champion, beat David Hay, he then bundles the money. I think, you know, just knock it on the head.
I've got a question which I think is a stupid question, but I'm going to crack on with it anyway. Obviously, I can understand, you know, the bigger you are, the harder you can punch, potentially.
Mm.
But your chin isn't necessarily harder the bigger you are. I mean, you could be a big lump but have a hopeless chin, couldn't you? I mean, is that a sensible point?
Well, do you know what? I've often thought this myself. I mean, could I knock out a heavyweight? I don't know. Have they got stronger skulls or chins? It's something, to be honest, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I haven't got a clue. I mean, but one thing I will say, don't you dare stick me in the ring with Anthony Joshua so we can try and find out, because I don't fancy the job.
So you're basically throwing down the gauntlet to Anthony Joshua here.
No, no. I'm
live on TalkSport.
Like, you can imagine. Then again, I suppose everyone's got a price.
Oh, I see. Here we go. How much? Come on then. Come on then, Darren. How much would you have to be offered to get in the ring with Anthony Joshua?
I think I'd take a cheeky 10 mil.
Would you? 10 million?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't live to spend it, but I could give it to my kids.
Are you allowed to, like, just run away? Because I mean, I'd do it for 10 million. As long as when the bell went, I just literally ran away.
If you was legging it, I think the ref would say, look, you know, you've got to engage in a fight here. This is not, you know, what's your name? Mo Farah. Not, you know.
But could they withhold the purse? Like, say, as soon as the bell goes for the opening round, you just fall to the ground and refuse to get up. Would the purse be withheld? Because I'd get in the ring with Anthony Joshua if I was allowed to do that. I could take the public humiliation, you know, if the money came with it. But I'm slightly concerned the money might be kept away from me.
I think we should keep this quiet because you might plant the seed for future Anthony Joshua opponents.
What about, are you allowed to leave the ring? You're allowed to just jump out, you know, like in the Royal Rumble.
You do sound like a couple of bottle jobs.
You've got absolutely nailed on there, Dan. Hey, listen, Dan, give us a score prediction for this afternoon.
Joe, I want to go. It's going to be a mad one. I think it's going to be like a 3-2 Chelsea win.
Sounds like a cracker, fingers crossed. Thank you so much for your time there. You heard it. Darren Barker asking for £10 million to fight Anthony Joshua. It will be live on this show.
Yeah,
and
we can set up a little ring in the corner.
And me v Barry will be on the undercard.
Yeah. I would batter you.
You reckon?
Yeah.
How? Why?
What?
Why do you think that?
You think I wouldn't?
No, I just wonder why you're so confident.
You think in a boxing ring,
yeah,
me against you, I wouldn't win?
Well, I'm definitely quicker than you. I'm obviously, you're a few weight categories above me.
I could punch much harder than you.
I've never hit anybody.
Well,
my fighting record is played 0, won 0, drawn 0, lost 1.
Punches thrown 0.
Punches thrown 0. Some bigger boys outside Jesus Green swimming pool. I had a little bike with tiny wheels and they caught up with me and just hit me on the top of the head. Bang. Yeah, it really hurt, yeah.
Well, sadly, we can't have this bout because you're on one leg at the moment.
Yeah, I'm out injured. So
you're scared.
I am, but I think it'll be pay-per-view. Max v. Barry's. I'm just surprised at your confidence there. I mean, I don't doubt that it would be not a very aggressive fight. I think they'd be waiting. They'd be wondering why they put that on before Barker versus Joshua. Oh, by the way, thank you, Darren Barker. We just sort of started talking and didn't say goodbye to him, but I enjoyed that. Listen, Jim Proudfoot will be on in 5 minutes' time. This is the warm-up on TalkSport.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM. TalkSport.
People are already talking about Rushton versus Glenn Denning, the undercard to Darren Barker versus Anthony Joshua. Live pay-per-view on TalkSport in the studio. Jay says, based purely on his voice, I also think Barry would flatten you, Max. Right, let's check if the show was any good, Barry. We've got the agenda. Let's see if we've completed everything on the agenda. We normally get about 8 out of 10, but crack through it. Point one, we talk balls. We did that.
Yeah.
Point two, we look ahead to Man City Southampton with Francis Benali. Did that?
Did.
Yeah. I've tweeted out as well his text number and his Just Giving page as well if you want to contribute to that. Point three, we look ahead to the Old Firm derby with John Collins.
We did that.
Point four, we looked ahead to Chelsea Manchester United with a boxer. We just did that.
Oh, yeah.
Darren Barker, yeah, coming out of retirement. Called us bottle jobs. He's absolutely right. Point five, we look ahead to Chelsea v Man United with a footballer. We didn't do that. Mickey Thomas was going to come on, but he didn't. So we will never speak to him again. Point six, we took Ray Stubbs to another place.
Gravesend.
Yep. We found out if Alan McLaughlin has more tellies than David O'Leary. No.
He doesn't. But he does have six.
He does have six.
Quite
tellies.
A lot of tellies.
The Premier League review is back. I've taken notes. What do we think of the notes?
I thought they were very good. I think you should keep it up.
Yeah, it was a joke about wheelbarrows. It was really excellent, if you want to listen back. Point nine, John Ketley tells Don McGuinness the weather in Manchester. He did that. The 10th point does not exist anymore. I'm still not allowed to tell you what it is. We didn't have to use the Mick Hucknall-Pelly anecdote once again. That is 9 out of 10. If you have anything metal, sell it immediately. Jim Proudfoot is next.
Max, Barry, thank you very much. I love you more than life itself. Someone has written on my screen here.
Thanks, Jim.
Do you know something? You always really should read these things just through again.
Those were the best bits. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a great day. I'm off for a mini break in Lavenham.
Mini break in Lavenham.
Yeah.
I'm not off on a mini break. We're not going together.
No, we tried it. It affected our relationship when it got physical.